It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. Here are your hosts, Chris and Teresa.
Well, hey, Teresa, how are you doing this evening? It's great to be back for another broadcast of Rose Chat.
It sure is. Chris, I've been seeing a lot of beautiful roses from your garden on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. How are things going?
Well, I'll tell you, it's been a great week for roses here in Alabama. You know, I'm starting to see lots of color again on our hybrid teas. And, it makes me excited to hear from this today's guest.
Oh, I know. Here in the Midwest, we're still without any rain. It's been almost 5 weeks, but we still have blooms. And that's just another testament to the survival spirit of roses. And with fall coming, I want to savor every bloom.
I know that's right. You know, it always makes me a little sad when that final bloom fades for the year, but won't be long, though. I hope that we'll still have blooms up till Thanksgiving.
I hope you do, too. I'll have to look at the pictures. It's possible we could have those here, but more than likely not. We'll get a cold snap, and that'll be the end of that, and I'll have to start my spring countdown. On this podcast, we'll be chatting with Alan Owings of the LSU Ag Center EZT Hybrid Tea Research Project. Alan is a professor at LSU and is the Gulf District Director for the American Rose Society, and he's here to talk about the research being done to find those hybrid tea roses that require minimal care. Hello, Alan, and welcome to Rose Chat.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Looking forward to visiting with you all.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. You know, the first time I saw the name of this project, it caught my attention for sure. Easy Tea, Hybrid Tea Roses. Now, that's exciting. While I love all kinds of roses, I do love hybrid teas. And when you add the word easy in the name, well, that's just a bonus. So could you start off by telling us all about how this project got started?
Well, we had been discussing for a number of years what we could do with the Earthkind roses that Texas A&M has been working on for a number of years, and we wanted to kind of expand that program and take it to how could we grow hybrid tea roses under lower maintenance conditions like we grow the Earthkind roses. So Clarke Graves, who's a member of the Rose Society in Dallas, and Dr. Steve George is one of the horticulture professors at Texas A&M, they kind of got me interested in doing this project at the American Rose Center in Shreveport. So we've been doing 4 years of research on low-maintenance, easy care, sustainable, low-maintenance hybrid tea roses for hopefully the whole country. And we have some new varieties that we think, or some new recommendations that we think are going to be really good for all the rosarians that are out there and also the new rose gardeners who want to try hybrid tea roses and don't have to be taking as much care on them as maybe we traditionally think they have to be cared for.
Well, I think that is going to be great for all of us that are growing roses, especially those that are new to growing roses. So we're very excited about the project. Were there specific things that you did to get the roses ready? Did you prepare the bed in any specific way?
Yeah, so what we were doing, Teresa, we started this program in February of 2009. And we did a little bit of a tilling of the native soil. We added some compost to it, and then basically we just planted into that. We consulted rosarians across the country, and we did a survey to see what they thought were the best performing of the lower maintenance hybrid tea roses. We had a list of about 80 to 120 varieties on that list, and then based on the varieties that we thought were the best of that 80 to 120 and the ones that we could easily obtain on Dr. Huey rootstock, number one roses, those are the roses that we chose to plant, and we used some of the planting procedures that are recommended in the Earthkind program, just amending your native soil with compost when you plant.
Oh, perfect. Well, what about fertilization? How did you treat them? How did you fertilize the roses?
And in this situation, sometimes a hybrid tea roses require a little bit more fertilizer than maybe a miniature or a mini flora or earth kind landscape type rose. So we do, or we did put out a 3-month slow release fertilizer early spring every year, but that's the only fertilization we did. So we fertilized early March every year, and that basically provided the nutrients that those plants needed for that growing season, in addition to the organic matter and the compost that was in the native soil.
Was there a particular type of fertilizer that you used?
When we started this, we were using Nursery Special 1266. Osmocote Triple 14 would be good. Any of the 2 to 3 month slow-release products that have a 2-1-1, 1-1-1, 3-1-2 ratio, I think any of those would do a fairly good job in that kind of a program.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. We know that roses, or black spot love the roses, so what about fungicides? How did you test fungicides with this program?
Yeah, so down here in the Gulf South where we are and where we were doing the research in Shreveport, we have a tremendous disease pressure from black spot, as all of you all out there know.
Mm-hmm.
And in a typical hybrid tea rose situation, you would really need to be spraying a fungicide about every 10 days. Some people say 7 days, some people say 14 days, but a very regular spray schedule with fungicide from mid or late February all the way through October and November to take care of your hybrid tea roses. But in this situation, we just put fungicide out 4 times during the year. So we took that fungicide recommendation and reduced it by 75% to 80% in terms of how much fungicide we put out in one growing season.
Mm-hmm. Were there particular brands that you used, or was it just any fungicide?
Yeah, on Teresa, on those, we were trying to use some fungicides that the average home gardener could go to the garden center, mm-hmm. to the farm supply store and purchase. So we used consumer formulations, and one of the ones that we used was a Fertilime systemic fungicide that has propiconazole in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also 1 year we used the Bayer Advanced Garden fungicide for roses that has a tebuconazole in it. So those were the two fungicides that we use. We use the Fertilime 3 years, and we use the Bayer product of 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Great. Anytime that we can use less fungicide, we're happy about that.
Yeah.
While you were taking care of these roses for the program, what was your pruning technique that you used?
What we were doing on that, we were just pruning as you would in a low-maintenance hybrid tea situation. We were just pruning in late winter, which in the Shreveport, Louisiana area would be, Valentine's Day, February 10th to February 20th, and then we pruned them in late August, early September, and we did not do any deadheading on the roses during the growing season.
That's good to hear. Here in the Midwest, where my garden is, we've had 2 years of drought, and this year, we had some water this summer, but now we're into a season of 5 weeks without rain. So we're very interested in things that we can do to use less water. So during this program, how did you irrigate the roses?
On the irrigation, severely limited the irrigation during the whole 4-year study there in Shreveport. We only irrigated the roses when they absolutely needed to be irrigated, when they were very stressed. We did have two of those 4 years where we had very dry conditions, so we had to irrigate about once or twice a month, late summer, early fall, a couple of those years, but for the majority of the time, they got very little supplemental irrigation. It was only what was absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So we pretty well exposed these plants to truly what you would say would be low maintenance or growing conditions.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's what we need. That's what we want to know, so that we know that the conditions that we'll give them in our own yard will be something that we can still maintain. What about compost and mulch? Did you compost?
When we started the study, we did put compost in the native soil, like I was saying, and then on a once-a-year basis after that, we did a mulch. It was really a mulch-compost combination top dressing. It was more mulch in there than it was compost. And as you add new mulch, new compost to your landscape beds, once or twice a year, you know, after a couple of years, you do get your organic matter building up. You can see that the compost and the mulch is greatly improving the drainage and the aeration and the overall texture and tilt of the native soil that's there. So it goes a long way to helping your physical properties of your soil when you compost and mulch on a regular basis.
Is there a type of mulch that you would recommend over others?
Well, for most of the home gardeners down here where I am, they use pine straw mulch. Some folks use pine bark. You can get recycled green waste material, like from some of the arborists who grind up trees. Actually, in Baton Rouge, all the green debris in the residential areas in Baton Rouge is taken to a compost facility in Baton Rouge, and all that green waste in Baton Rouge is made into landscape mulches and landscape bed soil. So that's a good way to return some things back to the environment from what's taken out of it.
Mm-hmm, very good. Is there a particular depth that you think we should use as far as adding mulch? Is it best, you know, 2 inches, 3 inches, more?
Yeah, I believe 2 to 3 inches for the most part is what I would recommend. When you're putting bales of pine straw out, you know, you may have to put 3 or 4 and realize it's going to settle to about 2 inches. But usually on your rose gardening, most folks recommend 2 inches, and that's what I would recommend.
Mm-hmm. That's just one of my favorite parts of the whole process. We know that it's good for the roses, and it just makes the rose garden look so pretty. Fresh
it
mulch.
It does, yeah. I like to put some out in the spring and then put some out in the fall.
Good deal. Before we go on break, could you share what you believe is the biggest benefit of this program?
Well, this is going to provide rosarians and home gardeners with some good new recommendations on easy-to-care-for hybrid tea roses. Hopefully we can transition some of the folks that are growing earth-kind roses, that are growing landscape shrub roses, that are growing drift series roses to maybe try a few hybrid tea roses too, because I think a lot of people are growing lower maintenance roses, but they're not growing low maintenance hybrid tea roses because they don't know there are actually low maintenance hybrid tea roses out there that you can grow and have good success with without having to spend a whole lot of time and money and effort to take care of.
I think this is going to be a great boost for people that want to grow these roses that they think of as difficult and something that they couldn't do, and now we're going to give these recommendations that's going to up their success rate. I think it's going to be a great thing for
there's a lot of potential with this program, and we're really excited about it.
Oh, I am too. Well, it's time for a break, and we'll continue our conversation on this fascinating project when we return. So just stay with us. There's more Rose Chat Radio coming your way.
It's time to order roses for spring delivery, and S&W Greenhouse has just what you need. From knockouts to hybrid teas, S&W has the best. From weeks, star roses and plants, and new this year, a beautiful collection of David Austin English roses that are sure to make your garden the envy of the neighborhood. Check them out online at sw-greenhouse.com.
We're back with Alan Owings of the LSU Ag Center, talking about the Easy Tea Hybrid Tea Research Project. Now, Alan, I'm excited to talk about the roses themselves, these cultivars that, you know, they've been under observation now for, 3-4 years?
We started this program, Chris, in February of 2009, and we concluded the study in October, November 2012. So we have 4 years of data on these plants, and that's a pretty good amount of information and a long enough period to really see what the best of the best is going to be.
Oh, definitely. Now, I want to talk about some of the roses in particular. Now, let's start with the top one, or the number, the first one in the on the list, and that's a rose introduced by Meond back in 1962. It's called Traviata.
Yes, Traviata. Traviata is a really good rose, Chris. It was really one of the outstanding performers in the EZT trial. A lot of people think it has kind of an old-fashioned kind of bloom to it. The petal count on it's very high. There's about 90 to 100 petals per bloom.
Wow.
The foliage is so dark and so glossy and so green, and it almost seems like it can repel the rainfall. And I'm sure it can't truly repel the black spot, but it certainly doesn't get a black spot on it the way many hybrid tea roses do. So we were really impressed with how a Traviata performed, and a lot of folks really weren't familiar with Traviata until we started doing this study, and then people were coming by the research plots and looking out there and seeing that rose and trying to figure out what rose is that. That's how good it looked.
Oh, wow. You know, and the photos I've seen of this rose, and I don't grow this one myself, but it almost looks like an English rose.
It does. It does have a little bit of that kind of a look to it. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Another one I wanted to talk about is Tahitian Sunset. It's an intro by Keith Zary, which is one of my personal favorite hybridizers. It's a nice rose. How did it perform in this?
Tahitian Sunset did very well also, Chris. It was one of the best performers the first couple of years, and it held on very good the last 2 years in the trial. And it's a former All-America Rose Selection winner, and I can remember getting some Tahitian Sunset roses in 2005 or 2006 at one of the trial gardens that the LSU Ag Center has, and I've always been very impressed with how Tahitian Sunset does. It's got some unique flower color that you don't see in a lot of hybrid tea roses, and the petal count is nice on it. It's not as many petals as some hybrid teas, but it's a good landscape performer for us.
Oh, yeah. That's sort of an orange-yellow blend, isn't it?
It is. I'm not exactly sure how you describe the flower color. Some people say it's a little bit a peachy or apricot sometimes, and as the flower opens, it'll change color on you. So you have a multitude of flower colors out there in the petals as the bloom goes from just opening until it kind of finishes.
Yeah, you know, I like that, and I think a lot of home gardeners like that too, the fact that the roses sort of change on the bush. And you know,
they do. It's always interesting a topic when people see those folks who don't grow a whole lot of roses. They seem to be drawn to those kind of characteristics on a rose bloom.
Yeah, it just creates so much interest in your garden. One of the others I wanted to ask you about was, I guess it's a sport of Traviata, pink Traviata.
Exactly. It's only been out for about 8 or 10 years now, but pink Traviata performed practically just as well as a Traviata did, and it also has the numerous petals like a Traviata has. And I've actually grown Traviata and pink Traviata in South Louisiana at the LSU Ag Center station in Hammond. I've had these roses 5 years. And I have never put fungicide in the Hammond trial, and they perform very well there, too. And there's even more disease pressure in South Louisiana at Hammond than there is at Shreveport, where there is a little bit less disease pressure. But I've really been impressed with pink Traviata in addition to Traviata. They've been nice plants.
Well, you mentioned not using fungicide, and I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that as far as do you see more and more, you know, gardeners not wanting to spray, not wanting to really have as low a maintenance as possible on
the we really are, Chris. We're seeing that. You know, I do a lot of presentations to industry professionals, but I talk to home gardeners and master gardeners and lectures and different groups many times during the year, and that's always a topic that comes up now. People want alternatives to what we would typically think of as fungicide and insecticide recommendations. They want to know what's organic. They want to know what are the cultural practices that could be implemented so they don't have to spray insecticide or spray fungicide, or they want to know which fungicide is safer to use than another fungicide. So all those questions are very popular, and it's how home gardeners are thinking now.
Right. And, you know, I think that's important that the industry comes in line with what folks are looking for today. Otherwise, you sort of have a train wreck at the checkout counter.
Right. I think we're starting to see, you know, more products being out there and more of those kind of products that are working well. So I think we're going in the right direction.
Oh, yeah, definitely. One of the other cultivars I wanted to ask you about was Frederick. Is it Mistral?
Frederick Mistral, uh-huh. And it's, it did very well, too. It has a little bit more of a less hybrid tea look. It is classified as a hybrid tea, but it's a little bit more bushy, and it's typically wider growing than you would normally think that a hybrid tea rose would be. You know, Traviata and Tahitian Sunset and Pink Traviata, they have more of your traditional upright hybrid tea growth habit, whereas Frederick Mistral with a little bit more spreading and kind of gets a little bit of a width to it or spread to it, in addition to being about 5 feet tall, you know. So it's going to be a hybrid tea that takes up a little bit more room than maybe what you would normally think that a hybrid tea would.
Now, it's one of the fragrant roses in this trial, right?
Yeah, it is. It does have fragrant blooms, absolutely. Several of these in the trial also have nice fragrance to the flower, so that's something else that's very positive about the results of this study.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think when you combine, you know, beauty and fragrance and low maintenance,
mm-hmm.
you got a winner, you know?
I do, too.
Yeah. We'll talk about one of the what I call the celebrity roses that's a part of this trial, and the McCartney rose. It's another Canard Pile or Star Roses really introduction, which is a tribute to Paul McCartney. Can you tell us a little about that one?
Yeah, that one came out in the mid 1990s, I believe, and it did very well in our trials too. And I think it maybe finished fifth overall. But it is a nice rosy pink hybrid tea. And also I was noticing somewhere recently that actually the McCartney rose is one of the top 10 most fragrant roses. I think it came in at number 9 in one of the recent lists of most fragrant hybrid tea roses. So that was interesting.
Wow. That is. I'm always, you know, when I'll tell you, as when I began planting a rose garden, you know, I just assumed all roses were fragrant, and I just went out and bought what I thought was pretty, and found out very quickly that you get a very pretty rose sometimes, but you don't always get that fragrance.
It does vary a lot from one variety to another. A lot of folks that don't realize that.
Yeah, it's important to do your homework. I learned my little guide to selecting roses was an invaluable resource, and. You know, finding out what's fragrant and what's not fragrant, too.
Right.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of the other cultivars real quickly that are, you know, roses that most people who have roses in their gardens might have, like Mr. Lincoln. You know, that's
we hadn't talked about some of the other varieties that were in the trial that actually did very good, but they weren't quite good enough to be an easy tea rose, but still Mr. Lincoln came in very highly rated. You know, that's one of the hybrid tea roses that most folks know about. It did very well in terms of overall visual quality in the garden trial, and also it came in fairly well in the black spot resistance too. So Mr. Lincoln did well. Tiffany was one that did fairly well. Tropicana's one that did well that several folks will recognize variety. And then one that was also very good was Chrysler Imperial. Chrysler Imperial finished in the top 10. So besides the top five, we have maybe some other ones in there that maybe can reemerge from this and be kind of reintroduced to the industry or to the home gardeners and give them something besides just the top five EZTs.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, one other that I read that was a part of the project that I've been growing for 2 years now is Pope John Paul II, which is
right.
a white hybrid tea. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on that. You know, I bought that plant and brought it here, and it just was didn't look like it was going to do much, and I almost shovel pruned it
mm-hmm.
last year. And this year it's just taken off.
Very good. I've heard several people say, you know, varying results on how that particular variety does. It did well in our trials in Shreveport. It didn't do overly great the first year, but it kind of came on toward year three and year four. I noticed that it had a little bit of petal blight on the flowers, which you sometimes get on some of your white roses. But for the most part, it performed well in the trial also.
Yeah, but you mentioned something on how it improved its performance year two and three. And do you see that on a lot of roses in general, that as they become more established in the garden, they tend to do better?
I believe that can work like that sometimes, Chris. You know, maybe it depends on what quality plant you started with, but some varieties do seem to take 2 or 3 years to get going. And then I've also seen the exact opposite, where maybe you put a variety in year one and year two and it goes like gangbusters, and then year three and four maybe you have a new strain of a black spot that moves in or weather conditions change and it goes downhill when it'd be a good the first 2 or 3 years. But usually after 3 or 4 years you're going to know whether that variety is going to do well for you in your garden or whether it's not.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Alan, before you go, Teresa and I and everybody here at Rose Chat always want to ask our guests, what advice would you offer someone who is just wants to get started growing roses?
Well, several things that I try to encourage people to do is, you first of all, you need to decide, without getting too complicated, you know, what kind of rose do you want? Do you want a landscape shrub, or do you want some miniatures or mini floras, or do you want hybrid teas, or do you want a collection of several? And try to decide what group or class of roses you want, and then try to pick out by talking to your rosarians in the local area, talking to your garden center professionals who know the best varieties for that part of the state or that multi-state area, and see and pick out the roses that you know are going to probably do well for you in that region of the country. And then you need to be thinking about your bed preparation. We always encourage folks to do a good job in their bed preparation, whether it be tilling or composting or making a nice raised bed. Everything is so critically tied to how well that plant is going to do based on how much time and effort you take into preparing the soil right before you plant. And then most roses, as several folks have said in some of the previous programs, really need a full sun, nicely air-circulated area, so the right microclimate around your roses is very important.
Oh, absolutely. That's some awesome advice. So, Alan, what's next for the EZT Hybrid Tea Research Project? What's coming up?
Well, we've been publicizing some of these roses. We've had some articles in the American Rose Society magazine. We hope to do a little bit of a regional or hopefully some national newspaper articles or promotion of some of these varieties next spring. We want to try to continue getting the word out on these varieties. And then hopefully sometime in the next year or so at the Rose Center in Shreveport, we want to try to put in some more similar research and look at expanding this program into maybe some other Rose areas. So.
Wow, that sounds awesome. Now, we've got a question from our social media that's asking, what are the best zones for these roses to grow in?
Okay, the best zones for these roses. Well, this research was done in hardening the zone 8. So, of course, we can't necessarily say all of these roses are going to perform exactly the same way all across the country, but I think the way that we picked out the roses that we tested by doing a national survey, that kind of takes away a little bit of the possibility that these may not do well. But we're fairly confident that, for the most part, these are going to do well throughout most of the United States, and hopefully they'll do that for us.
Oh, that would be great. Now, are there any plans to do regional testing?
We have not discussed that right now, but that's certainly something that should possibly be considered because, as you go up to Zone 5 and 6 and California versus New York versus Florida versus Texas versus Louisiana, it's all very different. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm gardening in Zone 8, and Teresa's gardening in Zone 5, and then you're down there in Zone 8 as well, so... it's important that we get out the best information
that we can.
Yeah. Well, Alan, thank you so much for being on tonight's broadcast of Rose Chat. We are just tickled to death that you could join us and to tell us about the Easy Tea Hybrid Tea Research Project. Sounds like that you guys have just hit it out of the ballpark as far as identifying these roses that are can be grown low maintenance.
Well, we're pleased with the project, Chris, and we hope everybody goes out and tries to find some of these easy teas and tries to plant some of them. And remember that if you're in the South, fall is a good time to plant roses, just like spring is. So don't disregard some rose work in the fall. You can plant roses in the fall in many parts of the country. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, thanks so much. It's great to have you with us.
Yes, sir, Chris. Nice to talk to you.
All righty. You can read an excellent article in the September and October issue of the American Rose Magazine on the Easy Tea Hybrid Tea Research Project, and also by visiting the LSU Ag Center. That's lsuagcenter.com's website, and just search out Easy Tea Hybrid Tea.
Chris and I are active members of the American Rose Society, and we believe that becoming a member is a decision you won't regret. So check them out online at ars.org. Well, it's been great to be with you, but until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com. Or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.